Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Our message for today is quite simple. Free Julian Assange.
Famed dissident and professor Noam Chomsky. Pentagon Papers whistleblower Dan Ellsberg. And former British labor leader Jeremy Corbyn are all calling on President Biden to drop charges against imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who faces extradition to the United States. They all spoke at the Belmarsh Tribunal. We'll spend the hour airing excerpts.
We are bearing witness to a travesty of justice, to an abuse of human rights, to a denial of freedom of somebody who bravely put himself on the line that we all might know that the innocent died in Abu Ghraib, the innocent died in Afghanistan, the innocent are dying in the Mediterranean, and innocents die all over the world.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former British labor leader Jeremy Corbyn, Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and famed linguist and dissident Noam Chomsky joined others earlier this year calling on President Biden to drop charges against Julian Assange. The WikiLeaks founder has been languishing for over 4 years in the harsh Belmarsh prison in London while appealing extradition to the United States. If he's extradited, tried and convicted, Julian Assange faces up to 175 years in jail for violating the U.S. Espionage Act for publishing documents that exposed U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. In January, Noam Chomsky, Dan Ellsberg and Jeremy Corbyn all took part in the Belmarsh Tribunal held at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. The tribunal was organized by the Progressive International and the Wau Holland Foundation. I co-chaired the tribunal with the Croatian philosopher and activist Srećko Horvat. Today, we spend the hour airing excerpts of the Belmarsh Tribunal. We begin with Ben Wisner of the American Civil Liberties Union. He's the lead attorney for NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden.
No government in any kind of system will voluntarily disclose its own crimes. For that, we need brave sources who have firsthand evidence, and we need a free press and brave publishers who are willing to bring this information to the people to whom it belongs. Now, in this case, the government characterizes that collaboration between a courageous source and a courageous publisher as a conspiracy. Of course it was a conspiracy. Good investigative journalism is always a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to end the monopoly on information that governments control and to give people the seat at the table that they must have in order for us to be able to judge powerful people and hold them accountable. But this is the first time, as you've heard already today, under the century-long history of the Espionage Act, that the government has charged this kind of collaboration as a criminal conspiracy. And this is vitally important. Remember, without sources like Chelsea Manning, like Edward Snowden, without publishers like WikiLeaks and the partners that it worked with to bring this information forward, what would we have not have known? Just over the course of my career, we would not have known that prisoners were tortured and sexually humiliated at Abu Ghraib. We would not have known that the CIA set up an archipelago of dungeons where people were held incommunicado and subjected to barbaric treatment. We wouldn't have known that any innocent person ever died in a drone strike. We wouldn't have known that governments developed and deployed systems of mass surveillance without the consent or knowledge of the public. These are all things that governments classified at the absolute highest level of secrecy. And yet, can anyone really say that the public in a democracy doesn't have a right to know or a need to know any of the things that I have just said? If this prosecution goes forward and ends in conviction, it will be a very dark day for press freedom in the United States. The prosecution has already had a chilling effect in newsrooms around the country. The lawyers for publications are already assessing the risks of publishing certain information in a way that they never had before. But let's not just focus on the threat to press freedom in the United States, because this is an attack on press freedom globally. And that's because the United States is advancing what I think is really the extraordinary claim that it can impose U.S. criminal secrecy laws on a foreign publisher who is publishing outside the United States. Let's think about that for a second. Let's linger on that for a second. This is opening an incredible Pandora's box. Every country has secrecy laws. Some countries have very draconian secrecy laws. If those countries try to extradite New York Times reporters and publishers to those countries for publishing their secrets, we would cry foul, and rightly so. Does this administration want to be the first to establish the global precedent that countries can demand the extradition of foreign reporters and publishers for violating their own laws? I truly hope not.
It is my great pleasure to announce the next speaker, Jeffrey Sterling, who is an American lawyer and former CIA employee, who was arrested, charged, and convicted of violating the Espionage Act. Please, Jeffrey, join the stage.
I spent 2.5 years in prison after being wrongfully convicted on no evidence of violating the Espionage Act. It was a travesty of a trial. And that sentence was held up as a shining example of the reasonableness and fairness that Julian Assange will face being tried here for violating that same Espionage Act. I remain sickened to this day that my persecution was held up as the benchmark of what Julian Assange is going to face in trial here. Of course, the benchmarks they did not talk about include my experience fighting against the Espionage Act, a biased criminal justice system, and the realities of being behind bars here in the United States. I can tell you that any claims of fair or humane treatment in store for Julian Assange here within our criminal justice system and prisons were outright lies. But I would like to focus on the law that Julian Assange is supposedly violated. First and foremost, it is virtually impossible to defend against the Espionage Act. Truth is no defense. In fact, any defense related to truth will be prohibited. In addition, he won't have access to any of the so-called evidence used against him. And to make it even more difficult, the government doesn't have to show any harm. It is a law and prosecution in which the government says what it wants. It's a because-we-say-so law, not to be questioned, not to be challenged. The trial will be nothing more than an affirmation and continuation of the character assassination that the government has launched against Julian Assange from the moment that he spoke up. So, but what are we really talking about here? I mean, what is this law, the Espionage Act, that he's accused of violating and that I was accused of violating? You know, we're led to believe that Julian and other whistleblowers are threats to the national security of this country, hence being charged with violating the Espionage Act. But I'm living proof of what national security actually means here in the United States. Here's a real benchmark they don't tell you about. In my example, I sued the CIA for racial discrimination because they said I was too big and black to serve my country. According to the government in that instance, and upheld by the same courts that they're intending to try Julian Assange, was that a black man fighting for his constitutional rights is a threat to national security. Not a surprise, really. One of the original and enduring threats to the national security of this country is and has always been African Americans. And to punish me as an African American for having the audacity to sue the CIA, I was falsely accused of and put on trial for violating the Espionage Act, and by default, our national security. The only evidence needed to convict me was the color of my skin.
I'm really happy that I can now announce our next member of tribunal, Margaret Kunstler, the legendary American civil rights attorney who has spent her whole career providing support and protecting the rights of activists. She was the co-chair of the Belmarsh Tribunal together with me in New York City, but this time she's coming to this stage, to this room, to Washington, D.C., as a witness to speak about the lawsuit against the CIA. Please, Margaret, join us.
Well, I'm not only deeply involved in this lawsuit as a witness, but I am deeply involved in this lawsuit as a plaintiff. And there are many people who, perhaps who are not with us today, who would be very happy to hear that the name of the lawsuit was Kunstler against Pompeo. This is a lawsuit that we hope will, in fact, be one of the major ingredients about why the United States cannot try Julian in this country. They cannot try Julian in this country because they've overdone their misconduct. They've engaged in the level of misconduct in interfering in the defense of Julian Assange that cannot be tolerated. And it's brought in this country so that people can understand just the tip of the iceberg about what has been done to Julian Assange, the actions that have been taken against him. Here, lawyers, doctors, and other professionals who visited Julian Assange, their conversations were recorded. But more than that, their equipment was taken, their telephones and their computers, and they were gone through. Now, this started happening in 2017. Before that, we had thought that the surveillance of the embassy was to protect Julian. But we found out through a lawsuit that was brought in Spain that starting in 2017, the lawsuit had completely, the type of surveillance that was going on had completely changed. And now the surveillance was on a level that has been unheard of in this country and unheard of anywhere in the world, that you would record and take information about conversations, about what plans were being drawn up, about specifically about the health of Julian and about what was going to be the defense at trial. Now, you're not allowed to do this. This absolutely violates the concept of justice in this country. And what caused this? How did we reach this level of hatred, of disobedience of law when it comes to Julian Assange? Well, it's significant that it began in 2017, because that was the year that Pompeo came into authority. And Pompeo's very first speech was that he considered Julian and WikiLeaks a non-state hostile intelligence agency. Now, to say that was an explanation that Julian had no rights left to him, that they could go in, they could kill him. Anything they wanted to do was fair game. And that is something that is so astounding to our level of understanding of justice in this country, that that was the cause of this lawsuit.
Civil rights attorney Margaret Kunstler testifying at the Belmarsh Tribunal at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Coming up, we'll hear former British Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, Noam Chomsky, Dan Ellsberg, and more. Stay with us.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell and blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green field from a cold steel rail, a smile from a veil? Do you you think you can tell? Did they get you to trade your heroes for ghosts? Hot ashes for trees and hot air for a cool breeze. Cold comfort for change. And did you exchange a walk on card in the war for a lead role in a cage?
Wish You Were Here, a special performance by Roger Waters for Julian Assange at the Belmarsh Tribunal in Washington, D.C. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return to the tribunal held in January at the National Press Club, I chaired the proceedings with the Croatian philosopher and activist Srećko Horvat.
With us, the British politician, former Labour Party leader, a great friend of ours, a member of the Progressive International, and a vocal supporter of Julian Assange. If he was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom today, perhaps Julian Assange would have been free already. But it's never too late. So it's my great pleasure to present Jeremy Corbyn today in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. Thank you, Srećko, and thank you, Amy, for presiding over today's event in this amazing setting of the National Press Club, where Julian Assange revealed uncomfortable truths to the world about the murder of innocent civilians in Iraq by specific military orders to do so, knowing full well they were breaking the law. What's Julian charged with? Telling the truth. Telling the truth all over the world about what governments do and what governments want to hide from. I, as an elected politician, I'm very well aware that elected politicians don't like being questioned on the decisions that they make. But it's fundamental to a democratic society that they are constantly under surveillance and under question. They're very keen on putting everybody else under surveillance. Their decisions should be under surveillance at the same time. And so, Julian published through WikiLeaks huge volumes of information. He went to extraordinary lengths to anonymize the sources and protect the sources at the same time. He was extremely responsible in his journalistic approach to this. And the way his character has been denigrated all over the world is a shame and a disgrace. He's threatened with the Espionage Act. The Espionage Act for somebody who revealed truths. And if he arrives in this country and is put on trial here, which I hope he never is, and I hope he never does, would then face a 175-year sentence. It is, in effect, a death sentence, and he would be left for the rest of his life in a maximum security prison in the most appalling conditions. He's being held in His Majesty's Prison, Belmarsh in southeast London. I've visited that prison on previous occasions to visit prisoners there. It is an awful place. It is a brutal place. It is a place devoid of humanity. And he is stuck there, not a convicted criminal, but a remand prisoner who is potentially awaiting trial. He's the only one in that category in that particular prison. Now, he is accused, and WikiLeaks are accused, of damaging the interests of the US government, of the British government, of the French government, And actually, if you plow through the tens of thousands of documents there, you'll find they're pretty embarrassing to pretty well every government in the world, including, as a matter of fact, the government of Russia as well, because Julian wanted the truth out about what powerful nations do to people without power who are victims of their exercise of that power. So he also exposed the way that desperate, poor migrant people face dangers in the Mediterranean, the English Channel, and so many other places. And so our plea is here today about support for Julian. But I say this to journalists who may be watching this around the world. You might say, well, okay, that's Assange, that's different, that's the way. Sorry, it's not. It's you as a journalist. Because if Julian Assange ends up in a maximum security prison in the United States for the rest of his life, every other journalist around the world will think, oh, should I really report this information I've been given? Should I really speak out about this denial of human rights and miscarriage of justice in any country around the world because the long arm of the United States espionage might reach me and an extradition treaty might put me in that same prison? And around the world, there are, sadly, hundreds of very brave and brilliant journalists who've lost their lives trying to expose the truth. So today, here in the National Press Club, we're speaking up for journalists, real journalists, all over the world who want to expose the truth that we are better informed and democracy functions better as a result. Now, as I said, I'm an elected politician. And what worries me is the silence of so many fellow elected politicians around the world. So my plea here today is this. You have been elected by an electoral democratic process. The people who elected you placed their faith and their trust in you to speak up for them and their democracy. Your silence makes it worse for Julian. Your silence makes it worse for democracy as a whole. And so when we surrounded the UK Parliament, the British Parliament, the Houses of Parliament, with a chain of people, thousands of people, in support of Julian, we were demonstrating our wish that our Parliament speaks up. In the same way, some politicians in a number of countries have spoken up. But I appeal to elected politicians in the United States, speak up to defend democracy. Speak up against the powers of the Espionage Act and speak up for Julian Assange. Because our human rights are under threat all over the world, the rollback of the advances of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the European Declaration of Human Rights, European Convention on Human Rights, and many others are under threat at the present time. Our actions around the world in support of Julian, in support of the right to know, can, and I believe will, change the course of what's going on. So let's get a message out here today from this National Press Club in Washington. We are bearing witness to a travesty of justice, to an abuse of human rights, to a denial of freedom of somebody who bravely put himself on the line that we all might know that the innocent died in Abu Ghraib, the innocent died in Afghanistan, the innocent are dying in the Mediterranean, and innocents die all over the world where unwatched, unaccountable powers decide it's expedient and convenient to kill people who get in the way of whatever grand scheme they've got. We say no. That's why we are demanding justice for Julian Assange. Hear the call. Let's free Julian Assange, and we will all be safer as a result of that. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, some people who are connected to WikiLeaks couldn't have been today with us. I want to remind of two names particularly who were, besides Julian Assange, working on the leaks and analyzing all these secret documents, who are still not allowed to come to the United States because they would probably end up in Virginia or in a high-security prison. One name is Sarah Harrison, and the other name is Jacob Applebaum. We were supposed to have Christian Hrafnsson with us today, but he was advised by his lawyers not to travel to the United States, similar to some other members of the tribunal who didn't arrive today. So much about the United States again. Christian Hrafnsson is an Icelandic investigative journalist who became, unfortunately because Julian Assange is in prison, the editor-in-chief of WikiLeaks in 2018.
In recent weeks, I've traveled to several Latin American countries and met presidents who are very concerned about the precedent set in the Assange case. After meeting President Alberto Fernandez of Argentina and his vice president, Cristina de Kirchner, they both sided with the Assange campaign, urging the Biden administration to drop the charges against him. Argentinians, as do others in the region, know fully well the capability of the CIA in planning kidnapping or killing of individuals, as we now know the agency was plotting against Julian in 2017. I met Luis Arce, the president of Bolivia, who fully committed himself in support of Assange. The same applied to the newly elected president of Brazil, Lula da Silva, who understands better than most the nature of the lawfare against Julian, having himself spent more than 500 days in prison because of such lawfare, a lawfare where it is well documented that the U.S. Department of Justice was involved. President Lula assured me that the fight to end the injustice entailed in the Assange case would be a priority in his foreign policy. I got the same strong support from Gustavo Petro, president of Colombia, who called for Julian's release and the end of the persecution. Lastly, I met Andrés Manuel López Obrador, president of Mexico, who has been a constant supporter of Julian and one who understands that this case is more than the battle for the freedom of one individual, but a priority fight for underlying principles. It was Obrador who said that if Julian is extradited to the United States, the Statue of Liberty should be dismantled and returned to the friends. The Mexican president received us in the WikiLeaks delegation earlier this month and assured us he would take the matter up personally with President Biden. They met last week in Mexico City. It is not just the political leaders of every major country south of the border of the United States that now recognize the gravity of Julian's case, as Anthony Albanese, Prime Minister of Australia, has recently added his voice to the demand for Julian's freedom. He said in the Australian Parliament that enough is enough, and we agree.
Our next speaker is Jesslyn Radack, human rights attorney renowned for her work protecting whistleblowers and journalists while working at the Justice Department. And she disclosed the FBI committed ethics violations in their interrogation of John Walker Lynn. Among her many roles, Jesslyn is the director of national security and human rights at Expose Facts.
I'm Jesslyn Radack, and I represent whistleblowers and sources for a living, basically. I have defended the most number of media sources in the U.S. who have been investigated and charged under the Espionage Act. Most recently, I represented and still represent Daniel Hale. Huge shout out to Daniel. I know he's paying attention to this. But basically, Daniel had to navigate an Espionage Act prosecution in the most conservative federal court in the country, the exact same court where Assange is indicted in front of the same judge. Daniel is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force who participated in the U.S. drone assassination program. After leaving the Air Force, he became an outspoken opponent of the U.S.'s targeted killing program. He basically called out and informed the public about targeting ineffectiveness and casualties and consistently exaggerated.